First pitch to Brandon Belt is smashed to right field. McKenna racing back. It's gone. First pitch long ball. Brandon Belt. The Blue Jays are up 5-3. That's a batting practice fastball from Mike Bauman. And for Belt, his third home run in the last two games.
Man, everybody's in their bag this morning. Sandman mixing in the audio call. We got Shulman squared on TV and radio.
Yeah, I love it.
And by the way, Shulman Jr. was not wrong there. That was middle that Bauman served up.
I like that Ben took liberties on that call.
I do. He should.
I was like, that is an absolute slop fest right down the middle of the plate. Let me hit
it. If you're not going to do that on a home radio broadcast of a team that has got beaten up by that team all year long, you're never going
to
do it.
Way to go.
Great job by both Shulman, yes, Ben and Dan. And Dan will join us a little later on. Very, very happy to be joined by our first guest of the day, John Morosi, joining us now. John, how you doing? Always good getting you on. You doing well this morning?
Doing outstanding. Brenda Daniele, by the way, we begin with some say it ain't so as we enter the segment, but I would say it was so on that home run. So well said there. A little bit of play on words with the music, but I just wanted to say good morning.
Yeah, everybody's doing well this morning. And Brendan Belt did very, very well with that last night. Sometimes you just need that, right? That was cathartic for the Jays. They had the O's come into town roughly a month ago and, I mean, beat them up. They took 3 of 4, and the one the Jays took wasn't very convincing. That was a playoff-style feel game last night. I mean, I know there's not going to be a ghost runner on second, but guess what? Brandon Belt's hit would have won it for him regardless.
Right.
Just a really important win for the Blue Jays to start off that series. At least that's how it felt to me.
Massive win. I think that a statement win in a lot of ways when you consider just how the American League wild card race is tightening, and to your point, the way in which Baltimore has dominated the Jays during the course of the season. A great play by Bo late in the ball game, obviously, to save the game. And I think if you wanted to see the contributions, whether it was the bullpen being really sturdy, another very strong start, this is the kind of game that the Jays are going to have to win to secure an American League wildcard spot, or maybe even more. We'll see how the next 5-plus weeks go. But when you look at how tight the race is overall, the Mariners apparently don't plan on losing any more games this season. And obviously now, my goodness, the Seattle's just one game behind Texas for the division lead. So it's going to be a really frenetic finish. It's interesting. It's almost like we're watching two different races unfold at the same time in the AL West, and it sort of there's a pivot point where it impacts the AL wildcard. I think at the end of the day, the Jays just have to keep playing quality baseball, and if they are playing good enough baseball to win this series and to keep continuing on as their schedule gets a little easier after this three-game set at Camden Yards, they're going to be just fine. And you know, we've talked for a long time about the Jays trying to chase down the Mariners or vice versa. It may not be Seattle that they're competing with ultimately for a playoff spot. So I think the Jays just have to keep winning series, and if they continue playing quality baseball, I really believe they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, they have to just focus on stacking those wins and getting into these. They just have to avoid a big rut, too. Don't fall into a situation where you're going to lose 3 or 4 in a row, because then you're going to notice that you're going to definitely lose ground. So right now, they have such an emotional win last night, they don't make up any ground. But at the same time, the race, as you pointed out, John, is incredibly tight, and who knows what it's going to look like. We're in the mode of it being a sprint right now. If this is a marathon season, we're down to the sprinting portion of it. The bullpen, again, last night for the Toronto Blue Jays was absolutely spectacular. Nails again. And Gunnar and I talked about it off the top of the show, where we said the length of the bullpen, the depth that they now have, and the plethora of arms down there is sort of what won them that ballgame, because it felt like once Baltimore ran out of their high leverage guys, the Jays just had more and more to give. That was huge. Their bullpen has been incredible this year. And is this, I mean, like, how much of an advantage is it right now for this ball club to have that level of depth coming out of the back end of the bullpen?
Well, it really is, I think, one of the more important ingredients for this Jays team. And to your point, Daniele, last night, 5 1/3 scoreless innings on just 2 hits and 1 walk. When you give up 3 base runners to the Baltimore Orioles over a span of 5 innings plus, that is outstanding pitching. And we talked about this yesterday a bit, the way that the Jays have played, they've got the fewest runs allowed of any team in the American League, any team in baseball, actually, since the All-Star break. They've pitched exceedingly well. And I think the bullpen's been a huge reason why. And you know, as much as maybe the front office was criticized for a lack of impact in the Paul DeJong trade and how briefly he was set aside, the Hicks move is massive. And it's not just the one inning that he pitches last night. It's what he allows John Schneider to do with the rest of his pen, and how having Hicks there broadens the way that you can utilize everybody else. I think Meza has been so reliable for them. He picks up the win last night, an ERA for him of 1.03 on the year. He's, I think, one of the very best at what he does in Major League Baseball. And so this is, when you look at this Jays bullpen, it's been a long time. I'm just trying to think back on the last times the Jays have had a bullpen this reliable, and, you know, knock on wood there, but this has been, I think, one of the more reliable Blue Jays pens that we've seen since their return to the postseason scene back in 2015. It's been that good, and it's a bedrock of this team. But when you add that to another solid start. It wasn't a long start, but it was a solid one by Kikuchi. This team is really well situated to make a run here. And I love that last night we talk about, you go back to last year and maybe where this team was short at times. There wasn't as much left-handed power, and there was that missing that veteran at bat, and there's Brandon Belt in a huge spot. I mean, I've been covering baseball long enough to remember Brandon Belt hitting in an 18-inning postseason game, hitting a massive game-winning home run for the Giants on the road, and sort of a similar swing and circumstance, and that's what he does for you. And so I think the last night, when you think about Hicks, you think about Belt, two guys that were not on the team last year coming up huge, I think it really shows that the front office, I think on measure, has done a pretty good job of addressing what this team has needed since the end of last season.
Yeah, we know the new way to do it in baseball is to use your closer, and whenever the first crucial high leverage spot comes up late in a game, if that is the seventh inning and you need to get through it, the thing the Blue Jays have done wonderfully is they just went out and got a closer, and now they get to save their closer for the back end of the game, and Hicks is effectively the mid-game closer, if you want to phrase it that way. Like, it seems that's the way they go about it. You mentioned them throwing Meza last night, and just to do a little compare and contrast between the Jays and the Orioles, and again, we've seen what the Orioles are capable of doing that the Blue Jays haven't proved this year in terms of their ability to put up huge amounts of runs in massive, massive numbers. But the pen depth last night was on complete display in the opposite way. You know, they go Cano and Batista, and they get good outings out of both of them. Batista, they don't bring him out for the ninth. It's Bauman who comes in, whereas the Jays are throwing 4 or 5 relievers that they feel great about in that game. And it really does just go to show. And again, I don't want to paper over what the Orioles have. There's a reason they have the record they have this year. But when you compare those two teams, it's night and day. Not the high end of the bullpen, but the depth that the Jays have compared to Baltimore.
Well, exactly. And I think that what'll be really interesting is, and who knows, maybe we'll have a chance to explore this in a couple months' time, but if this is an American League Championship Series game, how long does Cano pitch? How long does Bautista pitch? Do they extend them out a bit? I think in Brandon Hyde's case, he's got a 7.5 game lead now over the Jays in the AL East. And so I think he's going to be able to be a little more careful with how much he goes with his guys. That game meant more to the Jays than it did to the Orioles. I think that was an important point there to just compare and contrast how they were utilizing their guys. But you're right. I mean, Bautista can go more than 3 outs, but last night there just wasn't maybe the same need for the Orioles to do it. But I'll be curious to see now the second and third games of this series. The Jays, at least based on the season performance, nominally have the pitching advantage in each of those two games as well. We know, obviously, the Orioles have not been swept since Rutschman made his debut. It's a very popular stat that's been mentioned, I think, around baseball. So I think we'll see. We'll see how much urgency Baltimore has. One other thing I wanted to mention on just the lineup balance, if I may, it interested me last night that every single run, all – So five of the runs were credited as RBIs. Five of them were driven in by Jays left-handed batters. And we talked so much about the left-right imbalance. They were all driven in by Belt, Varsho, and Kiermaier. And I think those are all obviously names that were not on the team last year. And it just, that was a nice, tidy storyline for how different this lineup is than it was a year ago. You have some left-handed presence there. And with a healthy bow, it just, it lends a lot more, I think, in terms of offensive output. And I'm really excited about this team's upside because they seem to be hitting their stride at the right time of year, and that was a massive win in game one of a crucial series against the O's.
The importance of that game and the series, I think, as a whole, is tenfold for the Blue Jays compared to the Orioles, just given where they are right now. And also, Toronto coming in, I mean, with that win last night, they improved to 3-8 against the O's this season. But we know it's been well documented how they've struggled against the AL East opponents, and in particular the Baltimore Orioles, who have kind of big brothered them a little bit at times and made it feel like, oh yeah, we've completely usurped you in this current competitive cycle. One guy I did want to highlight, John, I'm so glad you mentioned the left-handed bats, but Dalton Varsho. And he's been on a bit of a heater as of late, and he's objectively had a really challenging year, but batting .391 over his last seven games, three homers, 10 RBI, if we even go larger sample size, almost .300 over his last 15 games. To have that bat be just even competent, to have him be a contributor in that lineup on a day-to-day basis, what does that do for this offense to maybe even jumpstart it further? Because they've obviously had their fair share of struggles in that department.
Well, you're right. And I think Varsho, obviously it's been a tough first year for him in Toronto. He's wanted so badly to contribute. He's such a great guy. I've known him for a number of years now, amazing family. And I think that, was he trying too hard? Was he trying to adjust too much with his with the approach that worked so well for him in Arizona? It's natural. It's normal to struggle in the first half of your first season in a new place. And I think since the break, it's been more of what the Jays expected. I think last night's game is a very strong example of how often, when you're batting sixth, something about that spot in the lineup, especially now that he's there as a great lefty presence there after Springer, something about that spot in the lineup that seems to come up with men in scoring position, two out maybe, and this is where you get your add-on runs and your crucial RBI. It's not always the second, third, or fourth spot. It's a little bit lower in the lineup. And I think that it's a really good spot for him to bat sixth. And I credit John Schneider for being creative and finding the right path for him to contribute. And I just think that that is the right spot for him. If he's able to have at-bats like he had last night, he's going to pick up some key RBIs. And that I think, it seems as though the message about the kind of at-bat that the Jays need from Varsho is now getting through. It's exactly what happened last night. He doesn't have to put 1,000 OPS out there. They've got Bo that's basically doing that already. He just has to pick up some key RBIs. That's really it. And play what is, in my view, a pretty athletic brand of baseball. Good defender, run the bases well, occasional power, just good at-bats. And I think the more that he simplifies his game, the better off he's going to be. And we've seen that the last couple weeks. I'm thrilled for him because I know how badly he's wanted to succeed. And I think he's going to be in that group of guys who are the most important players on the Jays roster in determining if this team ultimately makes it to the playoffs, which I still think they have a really great chance to do it. The pitching's been solid. And if you start picking up RBIs with guys like Belt and Varsho, that's exactly the vision that this front office had last offseason.
Yeah, it certainly is there. Wanted to ask you about probably one of the bigger stories in Major League Baseball, one that I think is already having some implications on the AL wildcard. Wander Franco placed on the administrative list. So correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is he can stay on that for 7 days, and then as long as the Players Association and he agree, that can be extended beyond that. Do you have any update for us on Franco? Any idea of when the investigation may come to a head or a timeline for this at all, John?
I don't, to be honest with you, and I don't think anybody really does in terms of what the timeline is and how detailed this could get and how long it could go. I think there's a lot of unknowns right now. But to your point, when there are investigations going on by MLB's Department of Investigations, typically that administrative leave can be renewed on a week-to-week basis. And we've seen that in the past, to your point, where MLB and the union, based on where an investigation is, that they're able to make that determination based on the information that exists at that time. But I don't have the specifics of the investigation. I'm sure that they're being kept very, very confidentially based on just the nature of the investigation and the serious allegations that are put forward. So I think that we all in the who follow the game have to realize this is much more important than baseball to have this investigation go through its course. And I think in the meantime, the Rays, they have no choice but to have their club without him for now and then wait to see what happens. But it's obviously a very concerning situation, to your point. But from a baseball perspective, there's just not a lot that we know. And we have seen in other cases where there are serious investigations that can take weeks, months. There is no date certain here. So this is we are in many ways unknown territory in terms of whenever he might be able to get back on the field.
Yeah, and like you said, the investigation is obviously far and away the most important part of this. But from a baseball perspective, I mean, if we were sitting here doing a power rankings draft for guys that would have the biggest impact, if you just take them out of the AL wildcard race, feels like a top 10 selection for me. I don't know. Maybe those guys are all pitchers, but you understand what I'm saying. Like, that is just such a massive piece to remove from the puzzle. I know the Rays have fallen from the lead they have in the division, but I've been kind of surprised that they've been able to keep their head afloat without him, quite honestly.
Well, from a baseball perspective, just on the field, they do have some organizational depth in the middle infield position, and they're able to get by in this circumstance. They've had a tremendous amount of injuries already to their pitching staff. It obviously goes without saying that they've built a lot of their decision making around Franco. They signed under this massive extension, which especially for a team on that budget is a really big expenditure. And when you allocate that much of your payroll to a player who is now not there, and we don't know if or when he's going to come back this season, it's a major issue for them to deal with. Obviously, there's far more important considerations here than that, but from a baseball perspective, it is a pretty significant impediment to the way that they are trying to build their team and compete in what's been a very, very difficult American League East this season.
Sticking in the American League East, John, the New York Yankees. Boy, oh boy, it's tough to be a Yankees fan these days.
The gift that keeps on giving to the rest of us,
for the rest of us, right. Yes. But in the Bronx, it's been certainly a challenging year for them. And they've now lost 9 straight, longest losing streak since 1982, which is crazy. It's remarkably, like, I mean, and I saw this crazy stat too, and I just wanted to, I'll mention it here, but there are two guys that are active across Major League Baseball that were even alive in 1982. Justin Verlander and Rich Hill are the only two guys that are still left that were even alive when the Yankees last lost 9 in a row. And the other thing that was a part of this, they get swept by the Red Sox over the weekend. That's got to sting because obviously it's a longtime rival. But I'm wondering, as we project forward with this team, what does the offseason look like? What do they try to do to retool this roster? And does that even include Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone still being at the helm of this franchise?
Well, these are really important questions. And I think that the longer this goes, the less that we know for sure about what the front office looks like and what the leadership group looks like of the New York Yankees. To your point, we have not seen a Yankee team struggle like this in 40 plus years. We have not seen this ownership group in terms of Hal Steinbrenner handling this, something of this scope and magnitude ever. And so the longer this goes, the less that anybody knows, for sure, in terms of who's going to be around, what it looks like. They need, to make the obvious statement, they've had a lot of issues with their pitching this year. And so you might say, well, okay, you got to go out there and sign the biggest free agent at that position. Well, they tried that last offseason in Rodon, and it's been a disaster in year one. They're stuck. Do they make a big play for Yoshinobu Yamamoto from Japan? Maybe. Maybe that's one path that they have. I think that he's a good name to watch. Michael Lorenzen is a good name to watch. Aaron Nola is a good name to watch. They're all great names to watch, but at some point, what the Yankees have to deal with is an apparent lack of depth. And when you have injuries that come up and you don't have a strong and productive group of guys ready to come up from AAA, there's a hole in your organization. And that's what they've got right now. You know, teams that have success, I think, are those that have optionable depth, a group of guys ready to come in and step in. You know, it's not unique. You know, injuries are not unique, and I'm always reluctant to ever explain things by saying, "Oh, well, they've had injuries, and Cortez has been hurt, and Rodon's been hurt, and Severino's struggled, Herman's not there." Yeah, there's a lot of, they've had a lot of adversity. But look at the Dodgers. Urias has been on the IL. Gonsolin's on the IL. Kershaw's been on the IL at different times this year. Buehler hasn't even pitched yet this season. And where are they? Oh, yeah, first place, like they always are, because they've got an amazing organization. And so that's what the Yankees are not. The Yankees are not the Dodgers. They are not. Similar budget, completely different organizational structure. And we just saw the White Sox let go of their front office yesterday, and Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams. There are some best practices out there of teams that do it really well. The Dodgers do, the Braves do, the Orioles are starting to do it. It's out there. Look at the Guardians with all their young pitching. They're probably not going to make the playoffs this year. Look how many young, impactful guys that they've had get up to the major leagues this season. You know, Williams and Bibee. I mean, they've got an amazing group. The Yankees do not have that, and until they get it, they're going to be stuck in this middle ground of being a decent team, but not a very good one. And I think as a result, if there are changes to the front office there, I don't think anybody could be surprised because of how profound their struggles are right now.
Can't believe we had a conversation about how the Yankees can fix their problems. We didn't just say go give Shohei Ohtani like $700 million. What a world we live in now.
A short answer there, he's going to go wherever he believes. If he's going to leave the Angels, and maybe they find a way to keep him just because he's comfortable there, and they've done a good job, I think, of trying to at least put their best foot forward this year. If he's going to leave there, he's not going to go to a team that looks around and says, "Wow, I see some dysfunction here." That's whether it's the Mets, the Yankees, no thanks and no thanks. He's been there, done that in terms of being on a team that spends a bunch of money and doesn't win. He has been there and done that. That's where the Dodgers, to me, you know, sometimes the obvious answer is the right one. If he wants to win and go with a team that has a solid foundation and a couple Hall of Fame players that are very unselfish in Mookie and Freddie, that's it. That's where he should go. But New York right now is not the place. I mean, like, I've got a lot of friends there. I'm there a lot. It's amazing how they're like, how Yankee fans tell me, yeah, at least we're not the Mets. And Mets fans tell me, yeah, at least we're not the Yankees. So which tells you that neither one of them is really in a good position right now.
John, I wanted to let you go, but I did want to sneak this in. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe you were in Williamsport for the Little League World Series. That looked like an incredible day. The guys are using funny bats. Harper's got his Fanatics bat. There was a crayon one. There was a pencil one. Guys are having fun with the kids there. These one-off moments are always, in my opinion, for everyone who's there. And if anyone else manages to take anything away from it, great. That looked incredible to me. Can you just talk about your experience there for a second?
Yeah, I love it. That was my sixth time there. I'm fortunate to have been at every Little League Classic since they began back in 2017. And it's one of my favorite days of the whole year. Actually, I brought my family for the second straight time.
Awesome.
My daughter's got me to slide down the hill, which was pretty fun. So I slid down on some cardboard, and remarkably, both of my ACLs are still intact and feeling pretty good. So that was good. I was a little nervous. But it really is. I've described it as it's almost like for your baseball soul, it's a real spiritual place to go because your passion for the game is revived. You realize, you know, why we all got into this in the first place. You got into it because you love summer. You love being a kid. The time of year is special because you know that whenever this tournament ends, all those kids that are playing in the tournament, they go back home and go to school. And so it's like that. It's like the old adage when you're a kid and you just don't want to come in for dinner. It's like you want to keep playing. And that's exactly what that is. You just want to keep playing. And so you want summer to keep going, and that's exactly what the mentality is there. So Williamsport's a very special place. It was great. I saw Rob Thompson there on the day of the game there on Sunday. And Rob, you know, the Phillies were around the Little League complex, which is separate from where the game happens. The game happens at Bowman Field, which is on the west side of town, and the Little League complex is on the south side of town. So it's a few miles apart. It's very, very close, but they're in different parts of town. And so I could tell Rob was there where the Phillies came and visited the Little League complex. He wanted to get as much time as possible and spend with the Canadian parents. So Rob was over there talking to the parents from Regina while Regina was playing against Mexico. So Rob gets it. Of course, a great resident of Stratford, and I think so highly of Rob. So he just did a great job of being an ambassador for Canadian baseball, and I thought you guys like hearing that. He knows the power of being there, and I really admire Rob Thompson a lot.
I am wearing a hat with a big Canadian maple leaf on my head right now, John. So I love that. That could not hit me more perfectly. My kid just started T-ball this year, so it's all hitting me in the feels right now. And also, lastly, I will actually let you go after this. We can only handle one baseball insider on the IL. Passan broke his back. Could not have you with the Achilles getting torn. So I'm thrilled you're healthy. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
I appreciate it. I send my continued best wishes to Jeff to get him. I know he's on the mend, doing well. But yeah, I was concerned for him there, and I'm glad that he's feeling better. So
awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome. Take care. Go enjoy the rest of your
thank
day.
Thank you, John.
John Morosi, ball of sunshine in our day always. Yeah. Love that. I feel like I was going to ask the Williamsport question regardless, but after we spend about 8 minutes talking about Wander Franco, I need something positive in my life again.
Definitely.
And we'd already talked about the Jays, so I couldn't just say, you just say one nice thing about Romano, so I figured that was the little positive ending we needed there.
That's cool. That's a highlight for sure. And I remember, I will say, growing up, I always loved turning on the TV and seeing the Little League World Series on. That was always so cool and fun to me because, A, you'd be like, oh, those are kids my age or relatively
awesome,
close, right?
It
was so cool. And I love the Rob Thompson little tidbit there because always, whenever he can wave the flag, that's great. We've had this debate ongoing on this show. Is he Sarnia? Is he... Well, I think John said Stratford. I think this is the hip answer.
Oh.
And this would be right up Ailish's alley. This is
Hamlet somewhere.
It's a Hamlet. It's Corunna, Ontario.
Okay, so my...
I'm pretty sure.
It's Corunna.
Is it?
My wife has family from all around that area, Sarnia. So if it is Corunna, I'm sure I am butchering one of them. Shout out to that Hamlet. My wife knows people there. So I feel like I actually, for once... have more bona fides on this than the person who's normally in this chair, Ailish.
Yes, I remember this vividly because last year when they made their run to the World Series, this was a raging debate on the show. Yeah. Segments and discussions were had.
I was going to hammer Sarnia because I have a vague connection there, but I have an even vaguer one to Corunna. My wife's going to yell at me about this when I go home tonight.
I'm pretty sure it's Corunna. Okay. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
I am wrong because I've said both five times
it's
in
okay,
the last 2 seconds.
But you're covering your bases.
I am covering my bases.
You're making sure you're covering all angles here and not getting in trouble.
I really am. Also, I know we're going to do Chew. Get 1 second for that. You're continuing to bring up the Yankees struggles to any non-specifically Blue Jays person. Don't ever stop, at least as long as I'm here. I remember back to the beginning of the season when all of the all of your gabagool monsters in the Bronx there, they were all over. They were full-blown Anthony Volpe hype.
Yes.
Baby! And hey!
They pronounce it Volpe. Okay. I mean, okay, whatever.
You have opinions on this,
I do
I'm
have
sure.
opinions. On that too.
He's got 17 bombs this year.
Yeah.
Good for him. 215, 293, 395 is the slash line for him. Not what you want.
He's a rookie.
Yeah.
What, like, okay, if we're being...
If they didn't do this to him, I would never bring up Anthony Volpe is struggling. I would never have talked about this. But I had to hear that this was the second coming of Jeets.
Yes.
Who was also super overrated, by the way, that I don't need to,
okay,
I don't need to have
far,
this
but...
in my life, okay?
Okay, I won't go that far. I'm not going to co-sign you on Jeter being overrated.
He was.
One of the best plays of his career might have not actually been legit, but we didn't have instant replay at that point in the day in baseball history, so what can you do? The Yankees thing is super fascinating. It's great because everybody can prance all over their grave right now and just
awesome.
Be like, oh, this is fantastic. I remember vividly a year ago in the summer at this time, the conversations in New York, you want to know what the topic was routinely in the dead heat of summer? It was, were the 2022 Yankees better than the 27 Yankees? And now, a year later, that same roster, pretty much unchanged, right? Relatively unchanged. Now they're sitting here saying, oh my God, we got to tear it down. We got to tear it down. I just think it must be so electric to be on New York sports radio right now, because the Mets suck, the Yankees suck, and yes, you have the impending excitement surrounding the Jets and what have you, but it must be so interesting. The polar opposite, how quickly it changed, a 365-degree turn compared to where they were last year to where they are this year. And I said it, I will pat myself on the back a little bit, especially Judge got hurt in LA.
Yep.
He hit his toe and all that nonsense. And I remember saying, from April, look at that lineup. Everything minus Judge is awful. They're not that great of a baseball team. And sure enough, came to fruition. And throwing money at your problems in real life or in baseball is not always going to work. Mm-hmm. Yankees are a prime example of that. I'm glad John pointed out, especially, and I firmly believe this with baseball especially, if you can't replenish your system, are in trouble. You need to replenish with quality guys that can step up and be valuable contributors to your major league team. The Yankees have struggled to do that. The guys that they thought could be those kind of players haven't panned out, and now they find themselves in a really, really tough position.
I'm just looking back to last year's Yankees team. Joey Gallo, that was a big point of consternation from him. Matt Carpenter hitting 15 bombs in 47 games for that team last year, and we thought that was sustainable. It was not.
Not
it most certainly
nope.
was not.
Nope.
That was awesome. Love you bringing that up. Please, please don't ever stop. It is now time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Tampa Bay Lightning gave us some hockey news, baby. Give me the applause for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah. First time I've ever asked for that.
Wow.
I have to look.
Defied Leafs Nation.
I know. No, no, it's fine.
No, you didn't?
We beat them. It's over. It's done.
Is it dead?
They're on the back nine.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows?
I do.
You're fully.
I'm not pouring dirt on Tampa that they're dead and gone forever, but this is the descending part of Tampa Bay's curve. Like Vasilevsky, you saw it. He could turn it on, but it also can turn off all on its own. Victor Hedman just had a tough injury, and we don't know how guys bounce back from that. Steven Stamkos, older than you think.
Definitely.
Only 1 year left on that contract as well. Now, he's probably going to do the Bergeron and just 1 year, whatever you need to fit me in. I've made my money, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, let's, it's not no longer the big brother anymore. Got past him.
Johnny
Tavano, he did it.
Demons exercise. Yes. Yeah,
Brandon Hagel signing 8 years times $6.5 million. I don't know about you. My first thought, even though these two guys should never be mentioned in the same breath, went to, what does that mean for William Nieman?
Yes, so did I. Oh my goodness. And I had this thought. Can the Leafs just not do something with one of those two guys, Nylander or Matthews, right now? Can we not get some clarity? It's August the 23rd, and we still don't have any sense of clarity. All we have is this looming air of confidence that Matthews has a deal that is tucked away, or that it's sort of...
Maybe.
But there's this... Leafs Nation has been really good. They've been really good, I have to admit.
Publicly, we've behaved ourselves, but the group chats are getting antsy.
Well, and it should be, because I will say this too. So I see this Hagel deal. You go on Twitter and you go on X, whatever we want to call it now.
We're calling it Twitter.
We look at the Explore page, right? And Matthews was trending.
Oh my goodness.
What happened? I click it. Do you want to know what it was? It was a clip from like 2017 of Clay Matthews mic'd up with Cam Newton when Cam pointing at him and like, Clay,
You watch film? You watch this
clip
too? That is a great
clip. Was trending for some bizarre reason.
Because it's an awesome clip and should trend every time it's
out
there.
No, it's fantastic. It's so good. But I was just, of all the days,
I know,
where there's a contract and there's news, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, we need to uproot the show. We have to change it all. Auston Matthews and nothing. But that was where my thought went immediately. It's a subtle reminder that it's August the 23rd and we have no news about Matthews and Nylander. And let me admit, Gunnar, Nylander, I honestly could probably care less about. Mm-hmm. If he plays out in the final year of his deal, I have no issue with that.
Yep.
And I've laid out my reasons as to why I think that's okay. But Auston Matthews, there's got to be something. There has to be something here.
Here's what's here. there is a, in my opinion, a hard, if the theory that we all believe is that Austin Matthews is being a good sport, I mean, again, people will roll their eyes at that because he's going to get like three times 13 and a half million or something. But if he is agreed, but is going to play ball with the Leafs and say, okay, I'm not going to put that number out there because you think it's going to help squeeze Willie. Boy, oh boy, I don't want to know what that does to team dynamics, but let's just park that one for right now. Let's say he does do that. It is all with the caveat, I would imagine, that I'm not playing along with this charade into camp. He can go hide in the desert or wherever he is right now, and this is all well and good. But the second there are mics, and I don't mean in front of anybody else's face, Brad Treliving can show up to Traverse City for the Leafs prospect tournament that will open before camp opens and get asked about this, and he can have a good poker face or he can take the heat of the questions. But I guarantee you, the whole reason Austin Matthews is going to, what did he do at the very start of camp last year? I'm going to talk about this once and never talk about it again. I imagine that the deadline, now the Leafs haven't put out their training camp start date yet. If you look around the league, the 21st is a pretty common start date for training camps, including for teams that are also in the prospect tournament that the Leafs are playing in. So that's why I'm kind of circling that. A month from tomorrow is September 21st. So as crazy as it's driving us all, I think
less
we
than
all
a month, Gunnar.
I think, is it 4 weeks to the day?
Less than, well, 23rd
well,
today.
24th. I'm doing the 4 weeks thing. If you
oh,
count
okay.
four Thursdays.
The 21st. Yes, no, okay, yeah. Fair
if
enough.
Four, yeah. If you count four Thursdays yep. from tomorrow, be a month until the September 21st. And then you're looking at a guy that he either doesn't have a contract, and then it is going to be a big thing. And I think that that is an inflection point for him because he could do it last year where he says, look, I can't, even if I wanted to, even if I wanted to commit for 8 years, I can't do it until July 1st, so don't talk to me about it. He can't do the don't talk to me about it when it's possible to put pen to paper now. So I think we're just going to have to, I don't like it. I would love, one, to talk about it right now before the NFL season comes upon us content-wise. I would very much like it right now. But I think we all need to get comfortable with the idea that that is almost certainly going to come out on the 20th
yep.
or the 19th or something along those lines. And if it doesn't, then it is full-blown panic mode. If there is not a Matthews contract and camp starts and he's getting asked questions about it, then I do think the Leafs have, I won't say misplayed their hand, because I think much like with Shohei Ohtani, until you can't re-sign that guy, there's no way you should ever give up on re-signing that guy. But that would be a massive inflection point where I go from this is all fine to this is kind of a 10 out of 10 panic for me personally.
Agreed. No, I agree. I would say definitely the cutoff is when day one rolls around and they do their, you know, media circuit and these guys have to stand up in front of a microphone and speak. At that point, he better have a deal, or we might get one of two situations. Either he's going to have to field questions about not having a deal in place and why that is a reality, given especially what he said at the end of the season after they got eliminated in the second round, which was, I'd like to be here. He made it pretty definitive and clear, which was encouraging to so many people. And I think it's part of the reason why fans have been relatively well-behaved, because there's this notion that he actually, we're finally convinced he wants to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we've really wanted to hear for a long time out of his mouth, is say, yes, this is where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But unless we have a deal by the time they set foot in front of that microphone, then it comes, as you put it, full-blown panic. There's real consternation that should be had. And there's also this option, which I think would be really bad, is he doesn't report right away until the deal is done. And if you recall, I mean, the Marner thing, I can't remember if it ever got to that point where he missed time or was arrived late.
Yeah, but it was weird.
It was weird.
Remember that.
He signed, it was very similar right
before. The 22nd was the day his deal got done.
It was right there. Like, that's, unfortunately, I think that's the ballpark we're playing in right now, is determining that. My other thing, takeaway and extension.
Can you imagine his flight just got delayed and he actually, it's like, guys, the bird is in the air. He's going to be here tomorrow. We would not be buying it. There is nothing they could tell us that would have us buying that.
Yeah, Austin's not here yet, but, you know, his flight got
delayed.
We've
all been there.
He was on a beach.
Yeah.
And as somebody put it, he probably was on a beach. He's on a beach. He's coming back. Don't worry. It's going to be fine. It's all good.
No.
I talked to Judd. It's okay. But the last thing I had, even with the Hagel deal, it's another 8-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's another 8-year contract that is signed. And for the Leafs to be in a position where if, and we all believe this, I mean, I'd be shocked if Matthews is signing one of those deals, but it is somewhat sad and concerning and unfortunate that he is not in a position where we're going to see that happen, because you'd want to lock him up and have him there as part of your, as the face of your franchise for a prolonged period of time. But the way that these contracts have been structured and signed in previous iterations is what has set the precedent for this moment, which is, you said 3 years, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's 3 years. I wouldn't be shocked if it's five, but I think three is probably the most likely spot. And that does not even put the Leafs in a position where you feel overly confident, because you're on the clock again.
Auston Matthews has made it abundantly clear he is never going to be on a best contracts in the NHL list. It's never going to happen. And you see this. You see this. And that a lot of times people would say, yeah, obviously, when you're paying a guy 12. No. Look at what happened with Crosby. Look at what has happened with McDavid as his contract is aged. He was the highest paid player in the league by $2 million when he signed that deal, and now McKinnon's eclipsed him. So the back end value, the Leafs will just never get out of it. And hey, if he's good enough to prove it, and I think he's good enough, that I am not Mr. They can't win with him guy. I think they very much can win with him as their number one center. He's an MVP guy. He's a 60-goal guy. But you're never going to have the surplus value that you should be able to get from those guys on a long-term deal, and it's going to continue to frustrate us. At a certain point in time, something's going to have to give. Either a Leaf is going to have to sign one of these deals. And I mean a Leaf of consequence. Shout out Morgan Rielly. He pretty much did that. And we don't give him any credit for it. But because he is, let's just be fair about what Rielly is. I love Morgan Rielly. Go listen to literally any episode of Leafs Nation Gord Stellick and I have done. It should be called WeLoveMorganRielly.com. But he's not on the echelon in the league that Marner and Matthews are at. Yeah. He's just not. Or, and I know other fan bases aren't going to want to hear this, I'm going to need somebody else to take a three-year deal. There's been talk of maybe Pettersson is that guy in Vancouver. Maybe that's the way he wants. Fine. I need to stop me from going insane. I either need, and unfortunately, it's going to come down to Marner, because I can't see it happening with Nylander or Matthews. I need that guy to take at least six. Can you give me six?
I have zero confidence.
Zero confidence. Because he's going to say, well, how much different am I? And we're going to say,
he's got Paul and Darren Ferris in his corner.
I know. It's
my
not happening.
Goodness.
It's not happening.
That's not going to happen.
All right. There we go. Hot little Leafs ladder.
That was great.
In the middle of August.
That was awesome.
Late August. We'll be having more of that over the next 2 days, I'm sure, when Sam McKee gets in here with me. Halfway through Fan Morning Show, keep on listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Might mess around and do a wake and rake later. If you want to get some submissions in, 590, 590, please include your name and location. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Maybe. Our man, Eric in Burlington, he's been all over
he's
it
been
this
all
weekend.
Over.
I don't know what happened to Neil, the tennis guy. Shout out to that guy. What happened?
Free tennis picks every day for Ailish and Justin. Yeah, they loved it.
Where are my tennis picks at, Neil?
Come on, Neil.
Hit me up, 590, 590. Or, you know, this is we won't feature this in the Wake and Rake. But for me personally, if you got any picks for Eastlake for the Tour Championship this week, I would love that. It gets going tomorrow. We got a couple of Canadians in the mix there, Nick Taylor and Corey Connors, of course, on the LPGA Tour, the CPKC Women's Open out in Shaughnessy. I'll be talking to my man, Adam Stanley, who's out there on the golf show on Friday, and Sammy and I will have the golf show for you. Basically, just an extended morning show with the golf show tacked on the end on Friday there. So all the programming tied up. I was going to ask you about this in the break, but I thought it better to do here.
Oh,
I love being surprised.
Yeah, let's do it.
What does Steph Curry pulling a LeBron ?
Oh, okay. All right. I mean, I got to ask Josh if we have this clip still from yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Because I do want to do this. Okay. Josh is going to do some digging and find this. Okay. So Steph Curry was a guest on Gilbert Arenas' podcast.
Mm.
You know, and Gilbert is, you know, I mean,
every single guy who's dribbled a basketball in his life have a pod now.
I mean, there's a lot of it out there, but yet they're
not complaining. I love
Gunner,
it.
Yet they're so inaccessible. Trust me. I know it from experience.
I would imagine.
From experience.
Let me tell you something.
I can tell you.
And you're very good at this, but you asking somebody to come on and Paul George are very different. I don't know if you know that.
I'm well aware of that. Okay. All right. And so anyway, that's you know, that's something to you know, God, you touched the nerve.
Let's put a pin in that.
Yeah, let's put a pin in it. You touched the nerve there. So Steph Curry's on a podcast with Gilbert Arenas, and you know, basically there's a question that is posed. Okay. And if we had, do we have the clip, Josh? Yes, we have this clip. Okay, excellent. Let's roll this. So you'll hear the question that is asked and you will get Steph Curry's response. Here you go.
Are you the best point guard ever?
Yes. Yes. Is me and Magic? That's the conversation?
Yeah.
Obviously, I have to answer it that way, but I really feel like, to your point, like Magic's resume is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
All right, so the fact that we're even having that conversation is a place I never thought I'd be in. But the fact that, to your point of like how you grade it and the whole conversation, that's why we have the conversations, because mm-hmm. it's fun and it's. Yeah. Is, you know, measuring errors against each other. And I love that's what basketball, that's what sports is all about. That's why people watch. That's why people get, you know, in heated debates about it. I love it. So you put me on my own team, yeah, I'm going to rep myself for sure.
Okay. So this is why I appreciate Steph's greatness,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't want him to say it himself.
Okay.
And I want to say Michael Jordan, I think he's the greatest basketball player of all time and has had just such a massive impact on the sport that it's hard to ignore. But yet and as cocky, as arrogant as Michael Jordan can be,
mm-hmm.
never once has that guy sat there and said, yes, I am the, I know,
because he doesn't need to.
The go. Exactly. Okay, you do not need to reinforce it yourself. LeBron James, this is where he's pulled a LeBron stuff here.
Yeah, that's where I disagree with
LeBron
you.
LeBron does it all the damn time.
Because he needs to.
No, but see, you don't. Because even whether you're number one or number two, we all know you're one of the best ever. You're the best of this generation, okay? And if anybody suggests otherwise, they're stupid. They're wrong. Because
yeah, but
you
he
are.
Had to listen to a lot of people be stupid and wrong and be like, I don't even think he's better than Kobe. He had to hear so much of that I will never, ever get up LeBron for taking up his case of Jordan. I will never, ever have a problem with this.
I think humility is lost in that sport more than all the other sports combined. Basketball, humility
yes.
is lost. And I never expected Steph Curry to be that guy. Okay, I never did. Now, if we want to legitimately just have this mm-hmm. conversation or briefly have this argument and debate it out, he probably is, you know, he's certainly, I would argue, I think Magic's number one based on how he revolutionized the position and the size that he brought to that position, the passing ability, all this stuff. I think he's the greatest point guard of all time.
Mm.
Steph Curry is maybe the most influential point guard of
I'll
all
hear
time.
That.
Okay, because you can go into any gym across this wonderful yep. city of Toronto or anywhere in North America or around the world, and you can see a kid that is 5'6" mm-hmm. and can try to mimic or emulate Steph Curry. You can't do that for Magic Johnson. There are certain players you can't do that for LeBron
no.
unless you're 6'8". Yep. Okay? So Steph's impact globally is bigger than I think a lot of people recognize, and people acknowledge it, but it's truly maybe the biggest for that particular position. Here's where I have a quibble with the actual point guard connotation
sure.
of it, the distinction. The position has evolved, and it means different things. Steph Curry, by definition.
Shooting guard.
Yes, he's not necessarily just a point guard. He's a combo guard. He's a remarkable player. He's electric. There's yep. no doubt about that. One of my favorite players growing up was Steph Curry, mm-hmm. and I appreciate his greatness for what he did in terms of shooting the basketball, how he's changed the game. But if we're really being honest, and I had this conversation with Mike at some point during the basketball season, and where I said, if you think about it, there's one, aside from Chris Paul, because I think Chris Paul has done a lot for that position too. Aside from Chris Paul in today's NBA, there's one guy, there's one true point guard that is left. The last vestige of a real, real, true bona fide point guard. His name is Jalen Brunson, mm-hmm. a guy that actually runs the show, runs an offense, and it fits perfectly because it's Tom Thibodeau and he yeah. wants that. But beyond that, there's nothing. The position has changed. And so for Steph Curry, I didn't like that he felt the need. He's asked the question. He answered it. I get it. But I think I would have certainly preferred. It made me feel like I was like, Steph, you didn't need to do that. It was unnecessary. You didn't need to go that route. Everybody's doing it right now. I get it. But I just felt like it's the low-hanging fruit and you didn't need to do that. It bothered me. It really did.
Yeah, I think the thing that I feel differently about this with, and I realize I am incredibly defensive about LeBron, is that he will Curry will have the thing to hang his hat on as always the greatest shooter now in NBA history. Like, that's what he's going to be until some other guy comes along 30 years from now, and then he'll be going, I guess Curry was pretty good, but I'm going to say I like myself. Maybe it's Grady Dick.
Yeah,
who knows?
Say, funny enough, yeah,
okay,
Grady Dick.
But that... For that reason, I think it's less of a thing that Curry has to puff his chest out about point guard status because he's always going to be looked at that way. LeBron had nothing else he could be measured as other than, are you Jordan? It was never going to be good enough to own this era because from the second he arrived, he kind of owned it. Like, go look at that first half. He had against the Kings. Like, that is why I think LeBron has to be, and maybe you think he doesn't have to be, and that's just a personal difference of opinion, but that is why I think he is so much more demonstrative about it, because there is no one will sit here and go, well, he's the most well-rounded player, because we don't care about that. We care about who's the best scorer. We care about who's the best defender. Shooting is a real thing, but well-rounded, we talk about it, we give it credit, but it doesn't carry the same cachet. It's like winning, shout out Damian Warner, it's like winning the decathlon versus winning the 100-meter dash. Yeah. One of these is sexier than the other. Oh, so I'm happy you brought it up.
The only thing is, that's for you and I to discuss and debate. And we can still, because here's the thing. LeBron, when we talk about him, it's either one, two, possibly three, four, if you're getting if people are getting in the weeds and really want to throw out random names and knock them down a peg, but he's right there. Mm-hmm. So that should be for everybody else to discuss and debate. And that's where basketball, unlike other sports, all these guys are just me. Can you not just be like, hey, I've let my resume speak for itself, and then I'm gonna say all the right things, and I'm gonna go out perform, and then when I'm done, you can debate all you want. I don't care. I know I'm one of the greatest of all time. You can know that in your heart of hearts, but you don't have to articulate it that way. You don't have to claim that you're better than so-and-so. There's no need for that. There's absolutely no need for that. Every other sport doesn't do it. But in basketball, for some reason, just like James Harden, oh my God, I have some news on that we should touch on briefly later on. But my God, like, I don't want to hear that. Just be quiet and move on. Or be classy with when you have that distinction bestowed upon you.
Fan Morning Show, Gunning and Tom Thibodeau, a.k.a. Daniela, here with you. Guns N' Roses coming to Rogers Center on September 3rd, and we're giving away tickets all week. To enter, all you have to do is tune into episodes of the Fan Morning Show and text our daily code word to 590-590. Today's code word is My Michelle. Text My Michelle to 590-590 right now for your chance to win. We are giving away another pair of tickets tomorrow. If you don't win with us, make sure to secure your tickets at ticketmaster.ca. Schulman coming up next. Plenty to get into with the Blue Jays, and then Aaron Rose joins us. Get you set for the FIBA World Cup, which starts in a couple of days, and you can watch it on Sportsnet. 1 hour left. Fan Morning Show on Sportsnet. 590 The Fan.